Your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day full of dramatic news, including a Supreme Court decision, actually a pair of Supreme Court decisions, that came down in a big hurry because it has to do with an emergency and life and death issues. The issues of vaccine mandates. People have passionate feelings on both sides. Both sides can take home a little bit of solace. A split decision from the Supreme Court. We will be letting you know what that actually means and what it means going forward. And going forward in terms of the Omicron variant, it's now, they're saying that well over 90% of all new cases are Omicron cases. And that's both terrible news because it means that it's everywhere and that, yes, you can be exposed to it very easily. But it also is good news in the sense that the Omicron variant is different and much less lethal, particularly for people who have been properly vaccinated and boosted. We're going to be speaking with a very prominent health care professional, somebody who has worked for the Kaiser Family Foundation and is affiliated with the Stanford University Medical School. And this particular professor and doctor says, look, we should be encouraged and hopeful about the way things are going. And yes, we may be near the very peak of the Omicron variant, which would be incredibly good news. Also very good news, there is no plot. They're just a bunch of lying skunks. And there was an allegation by some political jackasses that claimed that the state of Washington was about to send out strike forces to arrest people who weren't vaccinated. Not only does no one favor that kind of policy, it doesn't exist. What the people were using here, you won't believe it, but it's actually picking up an AIDS a discussion that was going on literally years ago and has no reality to it at all. But that didn't stop a group of people from conducting a noisy demonstration and some 8,000 people asking to speak to the State Board of Health. We'll talk about that issue and how that went the way it did. And concerning President Biden and his truly pointless at this point push for his Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Act, it's not going to happen because this filibuster is not going away. Kyrsten Sinema gave one of those speeches that you wish you could underline every line. It was a great speech on the floor of the Senate. And again, it does kind of encourage you that this a Democrat from Arizona is actually somebody who takes the Constitution so seriously and explains it so well. We will be listening to some of Kyrsten Sinema very soon coming up in the show. But first, the very latest on this court decision that was just handed down. And the Supreme Court has stopped the Biden administration from enforcing a requirement that was actually imposed and functioning on businesses in the country, businesses with over 100 people, where they would need to enforce a vaccine mandate. But that has been put on hold. They are not saying, and this is very important because, again, on TV, there people are giving you the wrong idea. The MSNBC, Pete Williams and Katie Tour spoke about the decision that came down today. But pay close attention because, as what always happens in these cases, the details are crucial. Listen to what they had to say.
So the question in these two cases is whether specific federal laws that govern OSHA and that govern HHS allowed the government to do that. And as you hear, Katie, the government, the Supreme Court has reached a sort of split here, saying no on the OSHA requirements. So they're now blocked, and yes on the HHS mandate. And the HHS mandate was in effect in about half the country. It was blocked in the other half of the states. So now the government can continue to enforce it in the entire country. But OSHA is now stopped in its tracks. And one other note here. These cases were not about whether these mandates or these requirements were legal or constitutional. It was simply about whether they should be put on hold while cases challenging them work their way through the lower courts. So that's the outcome that we have. No on the OSHA requirements, yes on the HHS requirements.
So no if you are working in a business with more than 100 employees. No, you do not have to get vaccinated or go through this testing policy unless your individual company requires it. But no federal rules on that. Yes, if you are a healthcare facility that gets federal funding, Medicare and Medicaid.
And by the way, the other thing that they're leaving out here is, and it's important that people know this, if you are in a state where they either permit your company to impose a mandate, or if the state imposes a mandate, that is not impacted at all by the Supreme Court decision. In fact, there's a long line of jurisprudence saying that states can establish things like vaccine mandates if they want to. But the problem is using the OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, using that as the basis. And that's really something that the administration was claiming on an emergency basis. And why should OSHA apply? Because it actually says that to protect people in emergency situations, the federal government can establish emergency moves like that. What they're saying is that doesn't hold here. The other cases about whether the general sense, without using that specific justification of allowing businesses to impose vaccine mandates, that's still making its way through the courts, and it's not, you're not going to get as rapid a decision as we did on this one. And in terms of the Medicare and Medicaid, the reason that the federal government has a right to, and that's what the court said today, has a right to impose a requirement that all healthcare workers who are working in hospitals or medical centers, if those hospitals and medical centers take either Medicaid or Medicare money, and virtually every hospital does. So what they are saying is that on that basis, because you're talking about Medicare and Medicaid being so omnipresent in every hospital, there's already a federal connection. And if the federal government chooses, and under President Biden it does, to impose a requirement that healthcare workers get vaccinated, well, nearly all of them are vaccinated anyway. But that right is upheld in these court decisions today. What's interesting about this is it shows, again, what a valuable institution the Supreme Court is and what a truly noble set of judges we have right now. We honestly have people in the court who think for themselves, and particularly the two stars of today, the two Supreme Court justices who won big were John Roberts and Neil Gorsuch. They split, and that's the way the court went. They were on the winning side in both decisions. And on the blocking the OSHA basis for setting up the mandate, it was the three liberals, Sotomayor and Breyer and Kagan, and then plus all of the conservative voters, the conservative justices. And then Roberts and Gorsuch voted together with the so-called liberal bloc on the healthcare workers. More on this and what it means, and also the idea of a strike force to arrest unvaccinated people. Not going to happen. We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVet Show.
Thank you.
Here's something interesting on the Supreme Court decision about OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, in not being allowed to be used as a basis for a mandate that would have applied to, it's 80 million people who would have been affected by that mandate. Now, of course, it's not nearly that many because the great majority of those people are already vaccinated. And again, there are many, many private businesses that do have mandates within the business. We were talking the other day about United Airlines, and that's true with most airlines. United is very proud of the fact that they have almost 100% compliance with employees. People don't want to give up their job because they're afraid of a vaccine that actually could save people's lives. But in any event, the interesting thing is the opinion, we don't know who wrote the opinion for the majority that said, no, this is not going to be your basis, this OSHA claim, the idea of occupational safe health and safety requires vaccines. Part of what the unsigned opinion, which is an unusual thing for such an important case, part of what the unsigned opinion says is it says, OSHA has never before imposed such a mandate, nor has Congress. Indeed, although Congress has enacted significant legislation addressing the COVID-19 pandemic, it has declined to enact any measure similar to what OSHA has promulgated here. The conservatives, as they call it, wrote in an unsigned opinion. That is the seven justices who, is it seven? No, it was six justices who voted in a 6-3 decision against the OSHA mandate. And in dissent, the three liberal justices, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Breyer, argued that it was the court that was overreaching by substituting its judgment for that of health experts. Acting outside of its competence and without legal basis, this court displaces the judgments of the government officials given the responsibility to respond to workplace health emergencies. So wrote Justice Stephen Breyer, and who was supported in that by Elega Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor. All right, so what does this mean? One of the things that I dislike thoroughly, and in fact, it annoys me a great deal. This is a serious court decision. It's not a football game. It's not, oh, we scored. Yeah, we got a field goal for Joe Biden, but the other side got a touchdown and a field goal. I mean, there's something, who knows? This is not that. And the idea that the way that this is being covered on television is it's a setback for Joe Biden. And I think they're doing some White House reaction that I would be interested to get. Because what we're talking about here is basically just doing better as a country. Can we acknowledge that? That right now, the United States of America, it's fascinating to have a list of nations that have a higher ratio of vaccines for COVID-19 than we do. And, I mean, it's one of those things that they were just mentioned it on the air. And again, I have a brother in Israel, and I have a whole bunch of nieces and nephews and grandnieces and nephews and a whole big family in Israel. And Israel today is one place where you can see that the vaccines are working tremendously. Now, Israel, which has a national population of over 9 million, is almost 10 million. They today registered 3 COVID deaths, which is the lowest level since the pandemic began. And part of it has to do with the fact that they have not only gotten people vaccinated, but boosted. And they're also trying to encourage people who have comorbidities to do double boosting in Israel. And there is no sane reason why a country like Israel, that's pretty busy with questions of security and building an economy and competing in the world marketplace and the economy of ideas, and being a little bit of an embattled country where there are a number of nations, fewer than there were before President Trump. President Trump deserves, to my lights, eternal credit for advancing the peace process in the Middle East. I think it's his greatest accomplishment, frankly. But if you take a look at that country, why should we be suffering a death rate in the United States? We had 2,700 people who died in the United States. That's 30. And the United States is about 30 times the population of Israel. So 30 times the death rate of Israel. If you were talking about that, we would be having 90 deaths, which is still a lot of people and still tragic and is still terrible, but 90 deaths instead of close to 3,000 that we have. And the main difference, and there does appear to be some agreement on all of that, has to do with the relatively low rate of vaccinations. And now, of course, it's true, the administration has not done a great job with the testing, but there's more about this question of vaccinations. There's a very big city, not too far away, and right here in North America, that is placing a vax tax on the public. In other words, if you don't get vaccinated, which greatly increases your chances in a nation that has public health care, they have a national health service, and things are paid for by the government. If you have the determination that you're not going to get vaccinated, and the chances are much, much higher that you're going to cost money to your fellow citizens with hospitalizations and care and the difficulties you face, is it ridiculous to favor a vax tax? We're talking about an issue that is a very hot issue in Quebec, but it's a very hot issue because it seems to be working so well. The one report, Quebec's unvaxxed tax has people rushing to get vaccinated, which is a good thing. And that, it seems to me, somebody who thinks, if you think it's not a good thing for people to rush to get vaccinated, not because they're forced to, but because there's a little bit of pressure about a little bit of extra money you're going to have to pay for that privilege of risking getting sick. We will get back to that and more coming up on the MedVed Show, 1-800-955-1776. Just some numbers in context, because they're important. And as much as I can help to inform people, I actually think that's part of my job. And these are the latest numbers in terms of the deaths per day that are happening in the United States. And the horrifying news, when you think about it, is that yesterday, January 12th, 2022, yeah, remember to put the right year on your checks and your letters and everything else. I know nobody writes letters anymore. But a year ago, on January 12th, 2021, we had a raging pandemic. We still had the Delta variant. 4,406 people died on that one day. which is appalling. And yesterday, the most recent day for which we have figures available, it was 2,756 people. I said 2,700. But again, think about that. Think of what that means for a country. In Israel, where they have been aggressive about the vaccination plans, part of the Israeli nature, Israeli people are aggressive. Basically, the idea of waiting patiently in line, that is not an Israeli trait. But Israel had only three deaths yesterday. The United States, of course, with a much larger population, with 30 times the population of Israel. Three, it had like almost, we had almost 1,000 times as many deaths. So we can do better in this country. As of January 8th, 2022, an average of 1,192 people per day have died from COVID in the U.S. since the first case was confirmed in Washington State on January 20th, the year before. On an average day, nearly 8,000 people die from all causes in the United States, based on data from 2019. Based on the latest information, roughly 1 out of 7 of all deaths each day were related to COVID-19 between January 2020 and January 2022. This is one of the reasons when there are people say, you know, basically the pandemic is a lot of hype, it's not a real problem. Look around the world, for God's sake. We're not the worst in the world. We do have the most COVID deaths. We also have more honest reporting than countries like Russia, for instance. But my goodness, it is a worldwide problem. It will be a wonderful, wonderful day if we actually do reach a peak and begin moving more dramatically in the right direction. The number of deaths, that is already the right direction. We'll be speaking to Dr. Pearl about this and about the future of dealing with not just Omicron, but with the pandemic coming up. Okay, Dateline Quebec. Quebec is the second largest city in the province of Quebec. Montreal is the big city, but this applies to the whole province, not just the city of Quebec. And Quebec has announced plans. They are already in process. They've announced plans to put a significant health tax on vaccinated people who account for a very disproportionate share of COVID-19 hospitalizations. That plan quickly drove a rush of new appointments this week. It's encouraging, said Quebec Health Minister Christian Dubé in a tweet announcing the surprising new gains. Dubé said the number of new vaccine appointments shot up in the 48 hours around the announcement, reaching what he called a record for several days. Quebec has reported the most COVID-19 deaths of any Canadian province, with more than 12,000 people losing their lives. With Omicron driving new infections, officials recently offered school closures and a 10 p.m. curfew. When the Quebec Premier, François Legault, announced the plan for a tax levy on the unvaccinated, he said only 9% of Quebec's population is unvaccinated, but they make up 50% of all intensive care cases. It's a fairly dramatic difference, right? You're 9% of the population and more than 50% of all intensive care cases. Health officials also noted the average cost of a COVID-19 intensive care a case in the hospital is $50,000. So that's what the taxpayer is paying to that majority of people who go to intensive care cases with COVID who've chosen to be unvaccinated. Those who refuse to get their first doses in the coming weeks will have to pay a new health contribution, Legault said Tuesday. The majority are asking now that there be consequences. It's a question of fairness for the 90% of the population that have made some sacrifices. We owe them. And sacrifices because they're not only dealing with their own hospitalization, but they're helping to pay through their taxes for other people who are much more likely to get hospitalized because they haven't gotten vaccinated. The health penalty would not apply to people with legitimate medical exemptions. One of my very good friends has a he cannot come close to taking the vaccine because of a pre-existing medical condition. The vaccine in that case with somebody who has a serious illness, that the vaccine could be fatal. So no, not there. But again, that's excluded in this Quebec vax tax or unvax tax. Legault said Wednesday that Quebec schools and colleges are now cleared to reopen after the weekend on Monday. There are also reports the curfew will be lifted on the same day. Quebec has been trying to raise vaccination rates in a number of ways, including requiring a vaccine passport for anyone who wants to visit a liquor or cannabis store. In the province, roughly 90% of its eligible population has received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, according to Canada's COVID-19 tracker. In another sign of the fallout over vaccines in the province, a judge recently suspended a father's visitation rights to see his child because he's unvaccinated, and presumably the mother didn't welcome that exposure. The special health tax immediately stirred controversy, of course, among vaccine skeptics and civil rights groups who question whether it's legal and how it might fairly be enforced. When Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was asked about Quebec's plan on Wednesday, he said, "Too soon to comment." In other words, his political advisors haven't told him yet what the popular thing to say would be or the popular response would be. I will tell you, there should be a tremendous popular response for Kristen Sinema. And she's has a fascinating life story. She, you know, she was raised Mormon. And now, and you can't help but notice in her terrific speech on the Senate floor, she was very proudly and visibly wearing a cross. And she is doing the Lord's work, I will tell you, in a very fractious body. You'll hear for yourself. Coming up on the Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
On the Michael Medved Show, there have been a couple of extraordinary speeches about this issue of the so-called Freedom to Vote Act, which is a ridiculous title. Nobody is against the freedom to vote. There's nothing in any of the bills that have been passed in the 19 states that have passed revisions of electoral law and procedure. There's nothing in there to subtract from the freedom to vote. But the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Act, by the way, Kristen Sinema supports them. She supports them both. She's going to vote for them both. What she doesn't support is blowing up the whole U.S. Senate, destroying a constitutional balance that has been achieved because of the allowance of filibuster. And she doesn't even use the term filibuster. She describes it more accurately and effectively as the 60-vote requirement in the Senate. In other words, yes, you need a super majority to get something through. And she explains that as well as Mitt Romney did the other day. He gave a remarkable speech. Senator Sinema from Arizona, her speech was longer, but it was beautifully delivered and beautifully written and extraordinarily important and a dramatic moment on the floor. And by the way, what's fascinating about it is she got extremely good reviews and reactions from her colleagues. And what this indicates is this is not like the budget-busting Biden Build Back Better bill, because on that one, it really is two people on the Democratic side who are preventing that disaster from becoming law and driving the rate of inflation even higher. There's a great piece by former Senator Phil Graham about why, of course, the Biden administration is going to be producing more inflation. But no, in terms of this filibuster idea, there could be as many as 12 Democrats who don't agree with their president on this, which is why that rabble-rousing speech, there wasn't much rabble to rouse. I mean, this Democratic candidate for governor didn't even show up. But I wish the president instead had sat in the Senate gallery, heard Senator Sinema, and then gave her some well-earned applause. Listen to the way she set up her remarks on the Senate floor this morning, clip 10.
They do not fully address the disease itself. And while I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country. The debate over the Senate 60-vote threshold shines a light on our broader challenges. There's no need for me to restate my longstanding support for the 60-vote threshold to pass legislation. And there's no need for me to restate its role protecting our country from wild reversals in federal policy. It is a view I've held during my years serving in both the U.S. House and the Senate. And it is the view I continue to hold. It is the belief that I have shared many times in public settings and in private settings. Senators of both parties have offered ideas, including some that would earn my support, to make this body more productive, more deliberative, more responsive to Americans' needs, and a place of genuine debate about our country's pressing issues.
In other words, what she is talking about here is actually saving the Senate. SOS? Save our ship. No, save our Senate. That's what Senator Sinema is trying to do. She coined a phrase, the disease of division. And I'm not sure I actually like that phrase, because part of what a Senate's supposed to do is divide. But not to divide and conquer, or divide and destroy, or to divide and own the other side. It's to work with the other side and figure out something where you can actually attract 60% of the members of that body who can find a basis to agree. And here is what she says about the lack of effort on the part of her own party and her own president in this regard of trying to deal with the disease of division. This is clip 12.
This work requires all Americans everywhere. Efforts to fix these problems on a bare majority party line will only succeed in exacerbating the root causes that gave way to these state laws in the first place, extending our descent into a more fragmented America. This work is our shared responsibility as Americans. I share the disappointment of many that we've not found more support on the other side of the aisle for legislative responses to state-level voting restrictions. I wish that were not the case. just as I wish there had been a more serious effort on the part of Democratic Party leaders to sit down with the other party and genuinely discuss how to reforge common ground on these issues.
Okay, and then finally she spoke in a positive light about actually addressing the disease of division and making some progress where it ought to be, needs to be possible. Clip 13.
Address the disease itself, the disease of division, to protect our democracy. And it cannot be achieved by one party alone. It cannot be achieved solely by the federal government. The response requires something greater and, yes, more difficult than what the Senate is discussing today.
Okay. Joe Manchin was listening very closely to her speech, and he was asked about his reaction by reporters leaving the Senate. He said, very good, excellent speech. Which is a pretty clear message. They aren't going to get their United Democratic vote to vote to end the 60-vote threshold, as Senator Sinema calls it. She said this in her speech, and it's just very good, and good for her. Eliminating the 60-vote threshold will simply guarantee that we lose a critical tool that we need to safeguard our democracy from threats in the years to come. Sinema said she does back the two voter overhaul bills, which the GOP unanimously opposes, but would not change the rules that would ensure that they became law. Quote, Congress was designed to bring together Americans of diverse views representing different interests and as a collective to find compromise and common good to serve our country as a whole. Yeah, that's basic physics, actually basic civics, and good for Senator Sinema. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to somebody with a very, very important voice. The future of COVID, it's just not so dire, says Dr. Robert Pearl. He is an author. He's a public speaker. He's a clinical professor at the Stanford University School of Medicine. He is a former CEO of the Permanente Medical Group. And he's the author of a book called Uncaring, How the Culture of Medicine Kills Doctors and Patients. And he also wrote a very important and very encouraging column for the Seattle Times called The Future of COVID-19 is Not So Dire. Maybe something we absolutely need to hear. And we will also get to, there were 200 people out protesting in Olympia, and whenever you get that many people in Olympia for something other than a homeless encampment, it's noteworthy. And this was a collection of very sincere and patriotic people who had been terribly abused and misinformed by media manipulators and demagogues. On what issue? On the issue of a strike force coming to your home to put you in a detention camp if you don't have a vaccine. It's a ridiculous notion, not going to happen, and that's worth celebrating among so many other things in this greatest nation on God's green earth.